This is Digital Story Podcast number 796, June 22nd, 2021. Today's theme is Digital Teleconverters Are Better Than You Might Think. I'm Derek Story. Thank you so much. Humans have an amazing memory when it comes to bad things. A lingered disdain for dogs because one chased you in the second grade, or a bias against digital teleconverters because you zoomed out to 10x in 2005 and were horrified by the results. But things change, and this week we're going to revisit the modest but useful 2x digital teleconverter that may be languishing in your mirrorless camera. I hope you enjoy the show. So today I'm going to talk about the joy of digital teleconverters. No, honest. I'm serious. This is not a joke. I'm really going to talk about how cool these things are. Now, I'm going to start with a story from Father's Day, which just happened. I'm recording this on Monday, so this was yesterday. And my two boys live down in the Santa Clara area, and I'm up in Santa Rosa. So San Francisco is sort of like halfway in between. So they set up this thing where we would meet down in San Francisco around the Presidio area, which is just this lovely, beautiful area, part of San Francisco. And so we'd meet down there, and they arranged for some takeout, and we're going to eat out on this great green expanse at the Presidio, where it's just beautiful. People go there, and they just hang out, and they picnic, and families come. And then after we had our picnic and so forth, they had a walk planned, and we would kind of walk along Crissy Field, and there's some nice views of the Golden Gate Bridge and the city itself. So I knew that, where we were going to be. So I wanted to make sure I had a camera with me, but I also knew that I wanted to travel light. This wasn't a day for me to, have a bunch of photo gear and, be like one of those dads. This was a day for me to enjoy and spend time with my boy. So I wanted to travel light. Well, I'm sure that's a huge shock to you, right? Of course I wanted to travel light. I almost always wanted to travel light regardless. So I packed in my pocket, I had the iPhone 12 Pro Max, and I thought that would be particularly useful for the ultra wide if I needed it. And it does have that, that 2X telephoto there. But I was more in the mood to shoot with the Fujifilm, the X100V. It's just that kind of day. I don't know. It just felt good to hold it in the hand and everything. So my iPhone stayed in my pocket all day. I never used it once, but I did pull out the X100V. So we're taking our walk, and I see some shots when we get near the water. I played around with some shots with the Golden Gate Bridge in the background and some really cool things in the foreground. That was fun. And the 35 millimeter equivalent lens of the X100V was fantastic for that. It really was. It was great. So that was all going really well. But then we kind of reversed direction. We went back the other way. And the view that right away caught my eye was the San Francisco skyline with a kind of a semi-low hanging cloud bank. So you had a little bit of blue right behind the buildings and then some fog above it. I love that kind of sandwich look. It's really gorgeous. And in the foreground, right in front of the city, was the dome from the Palace of Fine Arts. And I was going, man, that is really nice. And then I had some good stuff to work with in the foreground, in front of that even. So I'm going, that is a shot I want to do. I know it's a little bit of a postcard shot, but it was kind of an unusual angle, and the lighting was really good, and I just wanted to shoot it. So I line it up with the camera, with the X100V, with the 35 millimeter lens. And for that shot, the lens was too wide for the composition that I wanted. I was seeing something a little bit tighter than what I was seeing in the viewfinder. So I go, okay, not a problem. I'm shooting RAW plus JPEG. So I said, I'm going to go ahead and use the built-in digital teleconverter. And this is right now. If I had a soundtrack for horror, you know, or gasp, the audience gasps, right? I would play that. But actually, I've used this before, and I've also used the digital teleconverter regularly with the Olympus cameras. And it has a 2X that I just think is superb. I just think it's absolutely wonderful. With the Fujifilm, I can rotate. I have a setup so I can rotate the dial around the lens, kind of feels like the focusing ring, to either 50 millimeters or 70 millimeters. And for the composition I wanted, it was 70 millimeters. Now, I usually go with the 50, and I haven't wandered into the 70 too often because I had my own sort of built-in bias about using that or pushing it too far. But the composition I wanted was 70 millimeters, and I'm thinking in my head, okay, I'm shooting RAW plus JPEG anyway, so I'll have the RAW file, and I'll have a JPEG, a fine JPEG, at 70 millimeters, and then I'll just figure it out at home when I open the files up on the computer. And, you know, there's one footnote I want to make on this, in that with the X100V, with the earlier firmware, if you wanted to use the digital teleconverter, you could only shoot in JPEG. And then after a firmware update, I don't remember if it was firmware 2 or what it was exactly, where that happened, but they allowed you to use it with RAW plus JPEG. And I go, okay, this is really cool. So this is one of those reasons why you want to stay on top of your firmware, because the firmware allowed me to use a digital teleconverter and to shoot RAW plus JPEG, which is really what you want. Before, you just had to shoot JPEG only. You don't have your safety net, honestly. You don't have your safety net. I shot it with RAW plus JPEG, and so I knew I had this beautiful RAW file, and I had the JPEG that maybe would work out. Now, the cool thing about the way these work, and this is both with the Olympus camera and the Fuji cameras, and I'm guessing many of the other mirrorless cameras as well, is that you get the magnification, in this case 2x magnification, but the file size or the resolution remains the same. In other words, you're not compromising the size of the file. You still get your full 26 megapixel shot whether you're using the digital teleconverter or not. And this is the key to the whole thing because, you know, it's just not taking, you know, part of the frame, the center part of the frame, and then giving you that at a smaller resolution, which you could do in cropping anyway. No, it's giving you a full 26 megapixel shot, but at 2x. You know, I did the shots and I really liked the way they were framed. And then I put the camera away and enjoyed the boys for the rest of the afternoon. We had a great time. It was really a nice Father's Day. So I get back home, open up the files in Capture One Pro, and there was a few things that I observed as I was looking at these files. And I'm going to talk about those right now, those observations. Even at 70 millimeters, I ended up cropping the image a little bit to really get the shot that I wanted. So even the 70 millimeter shot is cropped a little bit, but not very much. So the cropped JPEG, you know, with the 2X, measured 5,479 pixels by 3,031 pixels. So that gave me quite a bit of resolution that I could use to make a print or, you know, play with any number of ways. The RAW file, you know, because I shot RAW plus JPEG, so I cropped it to the same dimensions, right, the same frame as I did the JPEG, and it came out at 2,748 by 1,755, so considerably smaller dimensions than the 5,479 that I got with the JPEG. So that RAW file cropped to the composition I wanted, it's still enough resolution for web work and, you know, things like that, blogs, things of that nature, but not much beyond. 2,748, great for online, but not so great for printing or doing anything like that. So that was the first thing. Substantial difference in the dimensions of the two files when they were cropped for the same composition. Now, the second thing I observed is that when I had both images after they were cropped, and I had them in fit and window magnification, which is, you know, how we normally look at our shots on the computer, they looked equally sharp. In other words, it would be difficult to tell any difference between which file was which while you're fit and window mode. So, you know, that probably doesn't surprise anyone at all, but nonetheless, it was something that I definitely looked at. Now, the next part gets interesting, where I started magnifying the images and looking at the details. So for the JPEG, I magnified it to 200% and was looking at it for the RAW file, again, to have the same, you know, framing, I had to magnify it to 400%, okay, because it was a much smaller file dimension-wise. So at 200%, the JPEG actually held its own compared to the RAW file at 400%, you know, which was needed to provide the same framing. Here's where the differences were. So the JPEG had a bit more smearing of detail at high magnification. So some of the very fine details, you've seen this before if you've looked at magnified JPEGs, had a little bit of smearing. And what the RAW file had, in order to get, you know, that same framing that I had with the JPEG, it started to show pixelation due to the, you know, extreme magnification. So the RAW file got pixelation and the JPEG had some smearing of detail. Now, the JPEG smearing of detail is, I think, more a matter of it being a JPEG and not a RAW, right? I mean, that just sort of comes with a JPEG, and it wasn't bad at all. I just, like I said, I had to magnify it up, and I did see that. Whereas the RAW, it was more pixelation. So I go, that's the difference between, or one of the differences between the two files. And by the way, I didn't apply clarity or haze reduction or any of that stuff to either of these files. And I have them posted on the Flickr account, on our Flickr account, and I have the links in the show notes. So you can go and download the original size of each file, not the original size, the full size of each file, you know, at those dimensions I talked about before, 5,479 for the JPEG and 2,748 for the RAW file. All right, so that was one of the differences between the two. They both kind of showed different flaws at higher magnification. Another difference I could tell between the files really didn't have anything to do with using the digital teleconverter. It had more the difference between RAW and JPEGs, sort of like the previous thing, which is that there was more tonal gradation. It was a little bit smoother with the RAW file than it was with the JPEG. In other words, as you move from dark to lights on, let's say, a building that had, you know, some gradation on it, it was a little bit smoother with the RAW file. And again, this was at magnification. You don't really notice it so much at fit and window, but at magnification, you could tell that there's a little bit more gradation with the RAW file. Again, this is one of those things that would, I think, is more of a difference between JPEG and RAW than anything else. One other thing that I noticed when I was just looking at what options were available if I did want to edit these files, and the RAW file does have more options, right? So the RAW file always has more options. So you have tools in Capture One Pro, for example, such as defringing and RAW sharpening, you know, some of that pre-processing of RAW files that you don't get with JPEG. So, you know, that's just something to keep in mind as you continue to work on these files, that you do have more tools available for the RAW files than you do the JPEG. I did do some processing on both files. I didn't publish those, but just for my own edification, I did some processing on those. When I added clarity and haze reduction to the JPEG, it cleaned up really nice and it looked really good. I didn't think it was wise to share those edited shots just to show how close I could get the JPEG to the RAW file. And when I edited the JPEG, one big difference after editing, which was that tonal gradation I referred to earlier, that was the biggest difference I noticed between them. In terms of detail and so forth, some slight smearing of fine detail, but that was it. And overall, the fine detail looked really good. So, and I looked at all different parts of the shot when I was comparing them. So after editing, you could get that JPEG, you know, pretty much the way that you want and have basically a lot more resolution. So I have these things posted on the Flickr site and you can download them and take a look at them yourself. The point that I want to make about this, and you've probably already figured that out, which is that I think digital teleconverters 10 years ago weren't very good and they weren't constrained. And what I mean by that, you know, they did allow you to use a digital teleconverter like 7X or 10X or whatever, which is way beyond the limits, I think, that they should be used. On my Olympus camera, it's 2X, and on the Fujifilm camera, it goes up to 2X, which is a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame using a digital teleconverter on today's cameras with the processing that they have in camera than it was using it years ago, and especially when you're only using it at 2X. Yet, that 2X is really a big deal. So when I'm walking around with the X100V, because I have faith in the digital teleconverter, then I essentially have a 35-70 zoom lens because I have the native resolution, the optical resolution at 35 millimeters, and then I can use the digital teleconverter at 50 and 70 millimeters. So essentially I have a 35-70 millimeter zoom without having to add anything onto the camera at all. And because I can use this tool in RAW plus JPEG, then I always have the RAW file if I don't like the way the JPEG turns out. However, that being said, on the shots that I have from Sunday, from Father's Day, where I use the digital teleconverter, I'm using those JPEGs. First of all, the lighting was really nice, and the camera, the Fujifilm, just captured beautiful shots. So it's not like I have to edit these shots much or do anything much with them. They were good in camera. And I have so much more resolution with the JPEGs that use the digital teleconverter. There's really no need for me to go to the RAW files. I have them in there. They're sitting in there, Capture One Pro, if I need them. But in terms of, you know, the files I'm going to use and post and, you know, work with and do all that stuff, make some prints with, I'm going to use the JPEGs because they look so good. So this is just a matter of one of those things where sometimes we get something in our head or bring it up to other photographers and they go, well, I would never use a digital teleconverter ever. And that would be it. And then you feel like a fool for bringing it up. I don't think it has to be that way. And if you have a modern camera, a Fujifilm, Olympus, and other cameras that have this, and it constrains it to around 2X and allows you to shoot RAW plus JPEG with it, I would test it. I would revisit digital teleconverters because they just make your fixed lens camera or the camera that has a prime on it just that much more versatile. And yesterday, all I had to do was just walk around with that one camera. I got all the shots that I wanted. I had a great time with my boys. I mean, it was fun, and I came home with some nice shots. And really, on a day like that, that's what I'm after, and I was really pleased with the outcome. Sounds good, doesn't it? Alrighty, so Canon rebuffs rumors that its R3 sensor is made by Sony. This is kind of an interesting story. And the reason why I'm sharing this story is because we just have to look out for rumor sites. We have to, everything that we read on a rumor site or that is a rumor or isn't verified by a couple sources, we have to take with a grain of salt and not necessarily believe it, and definitely don't spread it, right? Definitely don't spread it. Now, you can read this entire article on Petapixel. I'm going to give you a few paragraphs and then talk a bit more about it. Here's what Petapixel had to say. Since Canon's initial development announcement of the EOS R3, rumors have swirled that the company, despite its statement otherwise, was not the manufacturer of the backside illuminated sensor at its core. A report published on June 17th stated factually that the R3 sensor is made by Sony, and Canon has responded. All right, so Canon didn't say this. This was a report on June 17th that said the R3 sensor is made by Sony, and it said so definitively. Okay, back to the story. As Petapixel reported on April 13th, Canon stated that the upcoming EOS R3 sensor, quote, will feature a Canon's first ever full-frame backside illuminated stacked CMOS sensor that is designed in-house, end quote. Nearly a month after Canon's R3 development announcement, Canon News and Canon Watch noticed that some language had been adjusted on Canon's UK's website. What once stated designed and manufactured by Canon was adjusted to developed by Canon. This was the first set of reports that would surmise that Canon was not the maker of the sensor. On June 17th, these rumors finally culminated in a story published on EOS HD that definitively stated, based on documentation of a new Sony sensor, that the EOS R3 sensor would not be made by Canon, but instead would be a Sony product. After publication and some blowback from Canon, they edited their report to take out some key language, and Petapixel has that key language that they took out in this article here. So you can read it by going over to the site. This is basically one of those situations where something's published online, it isn't accurate, it's picked up by other people and begins to spread a bit. And usually Canon and the big manufacturers don't respond to these things. But this time, Canon did, and they said, look, that is flat out not true. This is our sensor that we have developed and that we're manufacturing. And I just wanted to mention that because it is a good thing for us to keep in mind as we read stuff on the internet. This is a pretty savvy audience that we have here, so I'm not too worried about it. However, this story will give you some ammunition if someone that you're talking to or hanging out with begins to quote something that they think is truth that may not be true, and you go, well, you know, these things aren't always true, and then you have this example in your back pocket as an example of things that are not always as they're reported. The Olympus lens sale ends on June 27th. I just wanted to mention this because this is a pretty good sale. Olympus does this every summer. So there's less than a week left for the Olympus lens sale that includes free two-day shipping on orders over $100 and, I think more importantly, 45-day returns for the lenses. And that's when you buy them directly from Olympus. Now, most of the optics are discounted between $50 and $100. For instance, a lot of the optics that I were interested in, like the 12 to 45 f4, that was a $50 discount. Some of the more expensive ones are $100. And then the three f1.2 lenses are discounted $150. The sale ends on June 27th. So if you have an eye on Olympus lens, and you want to save a little bit of money, I have the link to the Olympus lens sale in the show notes. It's on the Olympus site. And I've ordered from them before. They do a good job of fulfilling the orders. And like I say, not only do you get the two-day free shipping, but you do have a 45-day window for returns if you discover that the lens just isn't a good fit for you. So a good, trustworthy sale by Olympus there. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. I have a few things to mention to you. I want to start out with, well, let's talk about the Capture One Pro 21 Essential Training that's on LinkedIn Learning. This covers the latest features in Capture One Pro 21. I was talking about the Fujifilm camera today. I am a firm believer that Capture One Pro 21 is the best RAW processor for Fujifilm cameras, and it's also very good, very, very good. I would dare say, in many cases, the best RAW processor for many other cameras as well. And the application itself has evolved nicely over the years. I started working with this thing quite a while ago. Well, when I had to after Apple abandoned Aperture, and I've been very happy with it. So if you want to learn more about it, you know, you can download a free trial of Capture One Pro 21. Really have some time to get to know it. And then you can take this LinkedIn Learning training and just really see what you think. If you don't like it, then you haven't invested anything in the software. And if you do like it, it could be the beginning of a whole new thing for you. For those of you who have some film cameras or lenses or things as such around the house that you would like to donate to the Film Camera Shop, you can do that easily. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com. Click on the contact form and you can send me a note with what you have. I'll let you know if we can use it in the Film Camera Shop. Most of the time, the answer is yes. People will be happy to have it. And then I send a donation kit to you that includes a box and a prepaid label. All you got to do is tape up the box, put your gear in it, put the label on it, and then let USPS know to pick it up when they deliver your mail. And you can get that stuff back to us. I test the gear, get it cleaned up, get it in the shop, and then we get it in the hands of some aspiring film photographer. It's just a beautiful cycle, and it gets this gear out of closets and out from under beds and out into the world making images. I love it. The people that receive the cameras love it, and the folks that donate it, I love you. So there you go. It's a great thing. Thank you so much for all the folks that have donated shop. And like I said, if you have something, drop me a line and we'll take it from there. I want to give a huge shout out to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this podcast month in and month out and also serve as my advisors. Inner Circle members, I'm working on our workshop season for the second half of this year and into 2022. And of course, as an Inner Circle member, not only do you get a chance to chime in on some of my ideas, but once the workshops become reality, once they go onto the site, you will get a discount on every workshop that we offer moving forward. And it's one of the ways that I like to say thanks to you for your support. If you would like to become an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over, take a look at our site, see what you think, and then hopefully you'll sign up and become the next Inner Circle member to support the show and help support this community. An update on the VW EV electric car, the ID4. I got all excited last week and talked about it, and you know what? I jumped the gun. I did. I jumped the gun. Oh, man. Well, you know, when I got the call that the car was in a U.S. port and one that's only, only like an hour and a half from here. And the person who called me from the dealership said, oh, yeah, we should have this car here by midweek. And then, you know, we'll test it and get you over here and get you taken care of. I thought that the deal was going to go down last week. I really did. I thought finally the wait is over. This deal is going to go down. Well, that wasn't the case. And I communicated with him again today. And we just text message now, you know. And he said, I check with my manager every day and it has not been released from the port yet. So it is still sitting exactly where it was sitting when I did the podcast last week. So keep a good thought that we get it out of the port this week and that we can get it over to the dealership. It only, like I said, only take like 2 hours to drive it over to the dealership once it's released from the port. And then maybe we can make something happen this week. I'll keep you posted, but doggone it, I thought we were there. We're not there yet. We're not there yet. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, longest-running sponsor of The Digital Story. They have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. You click on it, it takes you over to our landing page, and then you can navigate from there, navigate to all the different types of paper they have, all the different surfaces they have, different sizes. I mean, anything that you need in terms of printing paper, they have. In addition to that, they have tutorials, they have product reviews, they have all sorts of helpful tips, and they have a terrific Facebook community at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Get your inkjet printing on, make some artwork that you can hand to other people and let them hold it in their hands and admire what a good photographer you are. Printing is the best way to show off your work. I hope you take the plunge, and when you do, click on the tile for Red River Paper and go take a look and see what they have to offer. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Do not fear the digital teleconverter. Embrace it. And while you're doing that, take some great shots. Be safe out there. Be creative. I'll see you next week with some more good stories. Until then, bye-bye now.